Penguin Random House Audio presents Character Limit, How Elon Musk Destroyed Twitter, by Kate Conger and Ryan Mack. Read for you by Eduardo Ballerini. For Kim Mack and Marie Arrow. The Golden Sir, at Screamin' But Calm. Me sowing, ha ha, fuck yeah, yes! Me reaping, well, this fucking sucks. What the fuck? 2:14 p.m., March 12th, 2019. Introduction. November 11th, 2022. After waiting for nearly 4 hours, the senior data scientist was growing restless. He hadn't planned to be in the Twitter office. It was Veterans Day, and most of his colleagues were logging out, but he was loitering outside a 10th-floor conference room at the company's San Francisco headquarters, waiting to be summoned by Twitter's new owner. Elon Musk was in his element. The 51-year-old billionaire thrived on tests of his endurance, thrilled by his own strength when he slept on a conference room couch at Tesla's factory, or stayed up all night putting together the final flourishes for a rocket launch at SpaceX. Now he was pitting himself against Twitter. In the aftermath of his $44 billion takeover, he was straining the bounds of the social network. How quickly could he bend it to his will? The data scientist, a lanky man with tousled reddish-brown hair and cutting blue eyes, had started working at Twitter only a year earlier. His colleagues had quickly come to see him as a deep thinker who was fascinated by the good and bad that came from connecting communities of humans online. He had honed his talent for distilling the vast landscape of social media into digestible sound bites during his 5 years at Facebook, where he had delved into reams of user data to explore thorny topics like hate speech and misinformation that contributed to people rioting at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. An academic at heart, the data scientist often critiqued his employer's faults with a level of candor that executives rarely heard from other employees. When Musk had offered to buy Twitter that April, the data scientist was optimistic. Musk was a man who had revolutionized two industries, mainstreaming electric cars and privatizing space exploration. Perhaps he was the visionary who could give the social media company a much-needed shot in the arm. But over the past 2 weeks, Musk had fired half of the data scientist's colleagues with no plan and little explanation of his vision. He had alienated advertisers, undermining the foundation of Twitter's business, and he had fallen for a blatant conspiracy theory, tweeting out a fake story about the husband of Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, suggesting he was enmeshed in a tryst with a disturbed man who had attacked him in his home. It was the kind of absurd fiction that only someone with a warped mind, radicalized by hours spent online every day in their own filter bubble, would believe. The data scientist was horrified. Musk, apparently, was one of the easily misled conspiracists he had studied in his work. Despite all the changes Musk had already made to Twitter, the billionaire had signaled he wouldn't be resting that Friday. Early that morning, he sent out an email to his employees extending a note of appreciation to those who were there with me. "I will be in the office again today," Musk wrote. "Stop by the 10th floor if you'd like to talk about taking Twitter to the next level. The priority is near-term actions." The data scientist decided to take the plunge. He trekked through the fog and gloom of the San Francisco winter, making his way up Market Street to Twitter's looming Art Deco headquarters. Just after 10 a.m., he set up camp at a bank of desks outside Caracara, a conference room with sweeping views of downtown and the gleaming dome of City Hall. Its glass walls allowed people passing by to gaze in at executives as though they were lions at the zoo. Musk was the main attraction, and the workers waiting outside to meet with him whispered quietly about what they hoped to tell their new boss. As the data scientist clacked away on his laptop, working on a pair of memos he planned to share with Musk, he eavesdropped. Some employees murmured concerns about how few people had signed up for Twitter's new subscription product. Others were trading tips on how to best communicate with their new leader. Behnam Rezaei, a warm man who wore round tortoiseshell glasses and had led engineering teams at Twitter for more than 5 years, approached the data scientist to offer advice. Rezaei had climbed the ladder into Musk's good graces, avoiding the firings that took out his fellow managers and rising to a vice president role. Rezaei thought highly of the data scientist and had cashed in some of his newfound political capital to get him FaceTime with Musk. "Elon only wants to hear positive things," Rezaei instructed him. "Don't tell him about what we can't do or try to justify the status quo. Elon just wants to do what benefits humanity." Rezaei wasn't aware, however, that the data scientist had already decided to quit. When he saw Musk's email early Friday morning, he delayed his departure by one day so that he could speak directly to the new owner. He still believed in Twitter and the power of large social networks, and he hoped Musk would listen. Maybe Musk's cohort of yes-men, who had arrived at the company following his takeover, hadn't dared to tell him how badly he was screwing up. As he waited, the data scientist finalized two documents he had prepared for his encounter. The first was a list of ideas for running Twitter more effectively. The second, a bolder statement, outlined why Musk's plans to earn significant revenue from subscriptions and alter content moderation policies wouldn't work, and how his paranoia and instability were damaging the company. As the hours ticked by, he scrounged for whatever snacks remained in one of the nearby kitchens. His heart beat heavily as he rehearsed in his head what he would say to Musk. Finally, just after 2 p.m., Musk's assistant approached him. Musk was busy, she said. He would have only 5 minutes. The data scientist strode into the conference room. Musk sat on one side of a large oak table, his sagging 6'2" frame scrunched into a Herman Miller office chair. The data scientist quickly introduced himself before launching into his presentation. Musk listened intently as he explained his ideas for growth, verification of users, and motivating employees. He then sketched out a vision for content moderation that placed decision-making power in the hands of an organization outside of its owner's direct control. Newspapers and magazines have editorial independence, meaning owners don't get to make final judgments about what stays and what goes, the data scientist explained. Social media companies should have the same structure. Musk wasn't impressed. "Or not," he muttered. Musk's assistant peeked back into the room and said he had another meeting. "Do you have any final thoughts?" she asked. "Yes, I want to say one thing," the data scientist said. He took a deep breath and turned to Musk. "I'm resigning today. I was feeling excited about the takeover, but I was really disappointed by your Paul Pelosi tweet. It's really such obvious partisan misinformation, and it makes me worry about you and what kind of friends you're getting information from. It's only really like the 10th percentile of the adult population who'd be gullible enough to fall for this." The color drained from Musk's already pale face. He leaned forward in his chair. No one spoke to him like this. And no one, least of all someone who worked for him, would dare to question his intellect or his tweets. His darting eyes focused for a second directly on the data scientist. "Fuck you," Musk growled. The data scientist grew bolder. He was not prone to conflict or insults, but Musk's reaction reinforced his belief that the billionaire was nowhere near fit to run a company crucial to the world's online discourse. He remained collected, but uttered something he had not planned to say. "I hope you'll declare bankruptcy and let someone else run the company." "Well, resignation accepted," Musk snapped. The data scientist made his way for the exit. "I'll take your laptop," Musk's assistant said meekly. He handed the device to her and left. As the data scientist walked back to the desk where he had left his belongings, he could hear the patter of two of Musk's security guards jogging to catch up with him. He wondered if they would try to hassle him, or perhaps even rough him up, but they simply watched over him as he packed his things before escorting him to the elevator bank. As they all got into the elevator car and rode down to the first floor, one of the guards turned to smile at him. "What did you say to him?" he asked. "I told him some things he didn't like," the data scientist responded. "They must have felt good." "Yep," he said, before stepping out of the elevator shaft, handing over his ID badge, and leaving Twitter's headquarters for the last time. "To be honest, what I said is what everyone is saying behind his back. but nobody's saying it to his face.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?